on her way to school, hundreds of miles away from her family. But within 24 hours of her passing, the Claras of the world and her many First Nations friends started a Facebook page called Shannon's Dream. They were memorializing this great hero, who, by the way, was nominated for the International Children's Peace Prize given out by the Nobel laureates, one of only 45 kids in the world to be so honored. But they also pledged to continue her work. They said, "We will never give up. Shannon hated broken promises, and we will never give up until every child has a safe and comfy school and a proper education." So you can sign on to Shannon's Dream, but I'm going to inspire you a little bit more and update you on what the kids have been actually doing. You know, there's a saying that it's so easy that even a child can get it. Well, kids get it. And they don't just care, they're taking action. These are children who, about 400 of them, had marched on Parliament Hill, and they had a message to the Prime Minister. It was right in the middle of the last federal election. I can only imagine, as you know, the Prime Minister's office overlooks Parliament Hill. And he had probably talked to his strategists about what to do with the political party A did this, or human rights group B did this. But I wonder what he thought when he heard the song, when he heard the voices of 7- and 8-year-olds singing the Shannon's Dream song with banners and letters in their hand. I think there's only one thing more scary to a politician than a child with a letter, and that is a child with a letter and a microphone. Now, your only hope if you're a politician is that you think the kids do not get it. This is too complicated for children to understand. So up comes... one thing I want to point out, by the way, these kids, they built this mailbox. And you can see it's a school. And they did that because they read a National Geographic magazine that said in the time that Shannon was waiting for a school, we had built 75 schools in Afghanistan. Something that we should do as a wealthy country, but raises questions as to why these kids were still suffering. And they also, the girls in the school told me, they wanted to show the government of Canada it's not that hard. We did this in an afternoon. And one other just disclaimer here. The child there in the orange t-shirt is not an NDP supporter. This is not a Conservative Party member as far as I know. And the red backpack is not for the Liberal Party. They are all there because they know what fairness looks like. Up steps Harry. This child had thrown away the first few drafts of his letter. He wasn't too sure that anybody would ever want to read his letter. And he stands up and he's looking down and he says, "Dear Prime Minister Harper, do you have a cat?" "I have a cat. His name is Micah, and he's a boy, and he's black." So this is a very polite kid, right? And then he gets right down to task. He says, "Stephen Harper, listen to me. If you do not build more schools, you're going to create a crime wave and lose all of your money. Because kids who do not go to school cannot get jobs, and they're still going to need money. So some of them are going to have to steal it. And then people in the community are going to get mad because crooks are invading their homes. So you better man up and do the right thing and build more schools. Love, Harry." You know? I say, yeah, I want to, I think that we should make that kid run in the next election. A little girl steps up there and she asks an important question of the country. She said, "Is the only reason that I get good health care and I get to go home to my family and I get to go to a good school is because I'm a non-Aboriginal girl? Is that the only reason?" Well, those letters flooded the Prime Minister's mailbox. There's a message that says that a country should be judged on the way it's treating its children. Well, in this case, the children are judging its own country. And they have a message to say that the country could do much better. Well, these inequalities that we hear about pile up on the hopes and dreams that children across experience. Jordan River Anderson was just a baby. He was born to a First Nations family from Norway House Cree Nation in 1999. His mother had a difficult birth, and he was given birth in Winnipeg General Hospital. But because the government of Canada believes it's not too sure it wants to pay for provincial health care costs, and the government of Manitoba is pretty sure that it's a federal government responsibility to pick up the tab for a child on reserve, When Jordan was ready to be discharged his second birthday, the government said he couldn't leave. The doctor said he was ready. The government said he couldn't leave because he's a First Nations child. And we don't want to set a precedent to picking up a federal government cost, Manitoba says. And the government of Canada says, well, maybe we have to owe something, but there is like all kinds of departments and we're not sure which one. We don't want to step outside of our authorities of our program, so we're going to leave this little baby in the hospital while we argue over who should pay. We were running, as a country, a $22 billion surplus budget. I've yet to find one taxpayer who would have objected to their money being used to sending this baby home. Weeks and months passed on the calendar, and Jordan's family and community members, the leadership of the Assembly of Manitoba Chiefs, doctors, social workers, you name it, were writing to the country and saying, put these children first, let him go home. The doctor said that his physical and spiritual health was going downhill, and I was expecting his physical health. Do something. They did nothing. They had another meeting. They had another case conference. Jordan waited 2.5 years in that hospital bed before he died, just before his fifth birthday, never having spent a day in a family home. He died there because he was a First Nations child. There's no other reason. Jordan's family wanted something very simple to be done. They asked, they said, we don't want this to happen to another child, and we knew that it was. So Jordan's principle says something very basic. Where government services is available to all other Canadians, and one of these payment disputes crops up, the government of first contact, provincial or federal, picks up the cost and then they can argue about it later. It makes sense, it's Canadian, and it's fundamentally a human value. Jordan's principle was supported by a unanimous motion in the House of Commons in 2007, but Ernest Anderson, Jordan's father on that day, said, do not allow what the good that's been done in my son's name today to only be a moral victory. Only weeks, if not months later, the government of Canada said, Jordan's principle really doesn't apply to all government services. It only applies to children with complex medical needs with multiple service providers. And besides that, we need to talk to the provinces before we could ever implement this. We don't know, we wouldn't want to pick up a tab without the provinces be there. And by the way, we're going to implement this case conferencing model for every child that comes up to your position. And meanwhile, in the government's own documents, it was talking about Jordan's principle and the lack of implementation and the impact for kids. And you can see here, they say that although we've not found situations where the federal government's been found liable because of child fatalities or critical incidents, we believe that they exist, and unless solutions are found, they will continue to occur. This is your government. They go on to talk about being exposed to liability concerns because these children may, in fact, die as a result of waiting. Now, even if you accept Canada's very narrow definition of Jordan's principle, Marina Beadle would tell you that the government of Canada is not even implementing it in that circumstance. Now, as you can see in the picture, Marina is an elder. She's from the Mi'kmaq Nation in Nova Scotia, and she's a single mother of two young men. Jeremy is in the picture, and if Marina was here, she would tell you, the first thing she wants to tell you about Jeremy is that he's her son, and she loves him to death. The second thing she wanted you to know about him is that he loves the powwow drum, and he loves art. He just comes alive when he sees those things. And what is equally true is that this child was born with hydrocephalus and a cerebral palsy, complicated by a severe form of autism resulting in self-harming behavior, especially in unfamiliar situations. With almost no support, because there's very little support available to persons with disabilities on reserve, even less than what non-Aboriginal people would receive off reserve, Marina parented him for 15 years. She told me, she said, I've just learned to sleep lightly because I want to hear Jeremy should he ever need me in the night. My worst fear, she said, was sleeping through when he would need. When Jeremy was 15 years old, Marina Beadle had a double stroke. so severe that she could not walk or hold on to a water glass. And when she awoke, her first concern was not for herself. Her first thought was, oh my gosh, what am I going to do when Jeremy needs me and I can't go to him? Off reserve in Nova Scotia, you'd be entitled to a $2,200 amount for care plus an extraordinary circumstances amount. Government of Canada documents lay out three options that they presented to Marina. They said, we're prepared to give you the $2,200 amount. That's going to be insufficient to take care of it. But the Pictou Landing First Nation could top it up. Now, the Pictou Landing First Nation, you all want to know, is the only government other than Norway House Cree Nation and other First Nations who have ever implemented Jordan's principle, and they are picking up the extra cost. But they have no money. It's a small First Nation, and they cannot do it forever. They cannot even do it for very much longer. So the government says, we recognize that they may run out of money, so things would actually deteriorate in the home to such a point that child welfare would intervene, and we will pay for that. And then there's option three, is that they were willing to have Jeremy placed in an institution hundreds of miles away from his family, and they would pay whatever it costs. And remember what I said about Jeremy's self-harming behaviors? There is no reason for this child to be removed from a home. This is not a mother who is trying to get rid of her child or relieve herself of the stress. She wanted to keep him. So what would you do if you're Marina Beetle? Would you hope that the First Nation kept the money, and then what are you going to do when you run out? Are you going to allow things in your home to get so bad that child welfare intervenes? Or are you going to place them in an institution? Well, this courageous woman said no thank you to all three and lodged suit against the Government of Canada, alleging that it is in violation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and is discriminating against Jeremy by not implementing Jordan's principle. Now, in October, I find myself in Halifax. The Government of Canada has the legal right to cross-examine Marina. The Government of Canada is defending the taxpayers. That would be you and me. I was ashamed. I know it's their legal right, but I've yet to find one caring Canadian who can say that they think that putting a mother who has gone through a double stroke, who's caring for a special needs child, who's at risk of losing him, because she's being denied services available to all other Canadians through the stress of a cross-examination, is good for the country. You can read the court documents online. When Canada's being cross-examined, the Canadian government agrees that these are the options, but they're not apologetic about it. They said, you know, that is the process. It's not a Jordan's principle case, they say. It's not that we're not humane. We understand this is a difficult situation for the family, but we can't do anything about it. And implementing Jordan's principle is complicated. So what do I do when I hear the words from government officials or others that things are complicated for kids? I go to the experts. Grade 3 classes. So I ask the grade 3 kids. I say, kids, the government cannot figure out how to implement Jordan's principle. Who here has an idea on how to do that? Hand go up immediately. Little guy says, rock, paper, scissors. Think about it. That makes more sense than what they've come up with at the highest levels of the Canadian and provincial and territorial governments over the last 7 years. And another little girl said, you know what? They need to take turns, or they need to share. But if you fight over things, nobody wins. If you fight over things, nobody wins.